This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighbourhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly. The satire, that is.
Hello, I'm Tony Hendra, and this is the Final Edition Radio Hour. We have a fine non-Trumpian show again for you this week. None of our talented crews on either coasts have taken the life-threatening risk of pretending to be the orange-hued excrescence for even a few milliseconds. On the other hand, we bring you some deep insights you won't get from SNL or HuffPost or any of the other Trump-wallowing idiots about the various parasites who live off its toxic proteins. The Final Edition came to the conclusion long ago that the Swamp Thing is never going up the river or down the tubes, so long as the craven human sewage in both houses of Congress continue to allow it to trample on the few remaining institutions they haven't already sold off to the robber barons. The attitude of the GOP towards the orange-hued excrescence is pretty much the same as their attitude on healthcare. The OHE is a pre-existing condition, and if you think we're going to lift a finger or spend a nickel to cure you of it, you're fucking crazy. So forget all that garbage, because here comes the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tiger Woods has been arrested on a DUI. The Final Edition asks the man on the street, what do you think?
Busted for driving under the influence. That's exactly what they got Lance Armstrong.
Look, it's only because he normally has a caddy drive for him.
What a putz.
PGA was like, PGA shots!
He should have just kept drinking Arnold Palmer's.
The real scandal is he was caught cheating with another car.
I mean, 15 other cars, though?
His mugshot looked like what my face looks like when I watch golf.
Guys, it's really hard being a golfer. Sometimes you don't get through that windmill, and it just wrecks your entire day.
Oh, man, he got arrested. He must have been so teed off.
He's lucky that he just got arrested. He is black.
Excuse me, Your Excellency. The White House is on the line. They want Trump to come visit. What should I tell them?
Tell them I am a messenger of God and am trying to promote his word and peace and love. And no, I will not let this filthy scum into the house of God.
Sir, we can't...
I know. Tell them, of course, we will entertain the head of state of one of our closest allies, and he should make sure he brings someone to check his food and wine, that demon piece of shit.
I'll convey the first part of the message. Will we be inviting them to stay for dinner?
Ah, yes. It is the Latin way to serve your guests, no matter if you think they are the offspring of Satan. But the offspring Satan didn't even want, because Satan is smart and evil creature. But the Trumper is just a stupido, not even worthy to take audience with a local storefront priest, let alone the Pope of the motherfucking world.
Any specific menu you'd like?
Well, of course, we must provide the most delicious meal for the fat slob. Can someone Google Slovenian treats for me so I can ask Melania what the fuck she's feeding him that he's oozing out of his subhuman paws? And find me the best fucking cow to make the best fucking chocolate cake in Italy to show this swine what a dessert is.
Chocolate cake. Anything else, Your Excellency?
I need to pray for my own eternal soul. How will I ever be an example for my flock when the devil's dingleberry is in my presence? Me, the cool pope, could have had a pool party with Bernie or a cigar with the Clintons. Okay, maybe not a cigar.
Sir, do you want me to call your doctor?
It's okay. I still have a few Xanax.
And now, a final edition Radio Hour classic from 2013 about the true origins of climate change. Denial.
The final edition presents a public service message from the National Denier Service.
Here at the NDS, we've been getting a lot of calls asking if tornadoes are the result of global warming. The best answer is that scientists disagree. Both real scientists and the ones paid for by right-wing front groups with bland patriotic names funded by the Koch brothers. We simply don't have enough information about tornadoes, weather, or bland patriotic front groups to make an informed decision. Most of what we know about tornadoes comes from The Wizard of Oz and Twister, one a classic and the other not even available on Netflix. Trying to formulate national policy based on a mishmash of the Lollipop Guild and Helen Hunt is itself a natural disaster. As deniers, we know that denial itself is like a tornado, demolishing some truths while preserving others. David Koch is very much like a twister, except twisters don't make big donations to the institutions they subvert. So the next time a tornado hits, do what Dorothy did. Lie on your bed and wait for your black and white farmhouse to take you someplace better. With any luck, you'll make it to that Disney CGI Oz and get to hang out with the magical James Franco.
The preceding announcement was paid for by Americans for Preceding Announcements, a bland patriotic front group funded by the Kochs.
Mr. Kushner, what seems to be the problem?
Ivanka is pregnant again. I don't want another one. I don't want to pay for Mandarin lessons or pay for someone to nurse it or...
Mr. Kushner, relax.
What can we do?
Maybe it's time for a vasectomy.
But my sperm have souls!
There, Mr. Kushner. It's a completely normal procedure. It's covered by your insurance, and many men decide to undergo... Mr. Kushner.
Yes?
Please remove your hand from my breast.
Sorry, doctor.
It's okay. This can be difficult to process. I'll have my secretary schedule a date with you for the procedure. Send in Mr. Miller.
Doctor, my... Penis is malfunctioning?
Excuse me?
Well, I can't sustain an erection.
Well, when's the last time you were with a female?
When she knew I was there? a joke. I picked up a call girl in DuPont Circle last week.
And you didn't ejaculate?
I didn't even get a Hoya.
A Hoya?
That's what we call erections at Georgetown.
Right. Your healthcare will allow me to prescribe you some ED medication.
Viagra?
Or Cialis.
Oh, there is one thing that works.
Jesus Christ, Mr. Miller! Put your penis back in your slacks.
Look, it's a Hoya.
Get out.
Steven is a bad boy. Steven is a bad boy.
Jill? See Mr. Miller out and then come in here. Everything all right, Doctor? Any more Republicans on the schedule today?
Just Senator McCain.
May as well be Jimmy Carter compared to the rest of these animals.
What happened?
Well, the president's son-in-law felt me up, and then one of his senior advisors showed me his dick, which shares the same name as a bulldog.
Wow, you must feel violated.
I do. Fuck. Isn't rape a pre-existing condition under the amended ACA?
Yeah, it's insane.
Fuck! I was just groped and flashed. I wonder if that counts.
Rape me. Rape me, my friend. Rape me.
Hi, I'm Ivanka Trump.
And I'm Tiffany Trump.
And we're the Trump sisters.
I thought we were stepsisters.
We're half-sisters. We have different mothers.
Oh, is my mother Melanavia?
Melania? Your mom is Marla Maples.
Oh, I get them all confused because Daddy's had so many wives, especially if you count the dead ones.
There aren't any dead ones. Cut! Cut. Today, we wanted to discuss our father. He's gotten some bad press recently, but we wanted to say, he's just your typical American dad, doing his best. Right, Tiff?
Well, I don't know. You've known him much longer than me. You're 12 years older.
I guess that's true.
You're like ancient.
I'm not ancient. I'm 35.
You're like old enough to be a cougar.
Unlike you, Tiff, I've accomplished a lot.
Well, I got into law school.
Well, we all know that Daddy got you into law school.
Well, who do you think got you into the West Wing?
At least I take my job seriously. I literally just came from a meeting in the cabinet room.
Well, I just came from my room, which is a cabinet, so...
See? Daddy loves us both equally. He's such a great dad. Like, when I was a kid, he took me to baseball games every chance he could.
Yeah, and made you sit on his lap.
Okay, you know what, Tiffany? Cut. Cut. Why don't you say something positive about Daddy, Tiff?
Oh, okay. Some people say he may be impeached, so I guess that's a positive.
Tiffany?
What now?
You can't say things like that when you're the president's daughter!
But he's doing shady things with Russia. You know that.
No, he is doing his duty, and you know that. Daddy always does the right thing.
Yeah, like when he got my mom, Ivana.
Your mom is Marla.
Pregnant and had nothing to do with the baby.
You know, I get why Daddy likes you least.
Well, I'd rather him not like me than want to sleep with me.
You know, I would rather him want to sleep with me than not get an allowance. I am so sorry. I should have never brought money into this. That was so mean of me. Sisters forever.
I thought you said we were half-sisters.
60-40.
I don't know what that means.
Why don't you just go to your cabinet? Tune in next time with Ivanka Trump.
And Tiffany!
Okay!
Hey y'all, this is like the breaking up to the minute eyewitness news. So let's bring it on.
Okay, all right. Hey, what's up, dudes? It's like the news. All right, so some stuff happened. Hold on, let me find that. Okay, cool. Here it is. Okay, check it out. Like, Korea is all up in our face right now.
Oh, dang. Sorry I'm late, dude. What a miss.
Korea, dude. It's like major suck balls over there right now, dude.
Wait, which one, dude? Like, east or west?
East, dude. West is like totally chill.
Rodman, we so need that dude to go back there.
Right, dude? Oh, and The Rock. Okay, well, now that we've covered the hard stuff, here's the weather.
Weird. It's so hot out.
No, you're hot.
Totally hot.
You're so sweet. I am hot. Give me some jewelry.
Okay.
Oh, thank you guys. You're so sweet. Okay, I'm good. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Oh, weather babe. She's so hot, dude.
Totally hot, dude. She's like the hottest weather babe we've ever got, dude.
All right, well, I think that pretty much wraps it up, right? Like, that's pretty much it?
Yeah, dude, it's all good, pretty much.
Okay, cool. Oh, dude, I think it's time to grab the hula hoops and do some serious raging, right?
Well, it is Wednesday, dude.
Hello?
Hi, is Brad there?
This is him.
Hey, Brad, it's Ari. Me and some friends are going to the movies Friday night. Want to come?
Yeah, sure.
I think Kat will be there, too.
Okay.
Brad, do you like Kat?
Nah, not really.
Screw you, Brad! Screw you! Sorry, Brad. Kat was listening on a three-way call.
No worries.
Well, I guess I'll see you at homeroom tomorrow with Mr. McClintock?
Yep.
Don't you think he has a weird voice?
Yeah, for sure.
Screw you, Brad. I do not have a weird voice. Screw you.
Sorry, Brad. Mr. McClintock was on a three-way, too.
It's all good.
Oh, I almost forgot. I'm buying Maroon 5 tickets when they go on sale Friday. Should I get you one?
No, thanks. Adam Levine is the worst.
You know what? Screw you, Brad.
You suck, Adam Levine.
Yeah, Adam, you suck.
Why'd I ever agree to this three-way call?
Okay, I gotta go. My mom's been a real pain in the ass lately.
Screw you, Brad. I freaking birthed you.
Also, I'm supposed to say some prayers before bed.
Like, to God?
Yeah, to God. Even though it's irrational AF.
Yeah, totally irrational AF.
What's the point of life? Why do we even live?
I mean, should we just keep on living, pretending to be happy?
It all feels like a cruel joke.
Brad, do you like God?
Nah, not really.
Screw you, Brad! Screw you!
Sorry, Brad.
No worries.
But here's my number.
Hello, and thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour. We would like to take this time right now to address an issue many of our listeners have asked us about.
That's right. We've been receiving multiple letters, emails, calls, tweets, and temporary Snapchats accusing the Final Edition of putting hidden messages into our recordings.
Now, that's just crazy. We are all comedians with no hidden agenda and no plan to subliminally convince you to do something you wouldn't have done in the first place.
Exactly. And now that we cleared that up, we now return you to your regular satirical comedy. Enjoy.
Okay, the mayor is going to be here any minute, and I want to make sure when he's done eating at Applebee's, he remembers it as the best experience of his life. Here at Applebee's.
I totally understand you, manager of this casual dining eatery known as Applebee's. I'm going to make the best riblets ever because it's one of our specialties. Right here at the wonderful Applebee's.
That's right. Just like that old Chinese proverb says,
everyone must eat at Applebee's.
Of course. Hey, boss, I'm going to go add our secret ingredient to the Applebee's riblets now. You know the one.
Yes. The
give us your money.
Right? It's the Applebee's special.
That's us, Applebee's, just a small mom-and-pop restaurant with over 2,033 locations worldwide, trying to make it in the big city.
Located at...
Call your closest Applebee's. Applebee's.
Applebee's.
You will eat here. You will eat here. You will eat here.
Hey, the mayor just left Applebee's, and he loved Applebee's. See, everyone should visit Applebee's and give Applebee's your money. I mean...
Give Applebee's your money.
Keith? What was that?
What? That was just my sketch called The Mayor Eats Dinner. Why?
But the mayor was never in this sketch, and you had really obvious hidden messages through the whole thing.
What? I did?
Applebee's. Applebee's. Applebee's.
Yeah, like I just saw you whisper Applebee's into the mic. Keith, is the gross chain Applebee's really your favorite restaurant?
You got me, but I bet you feel like Applebee's now, right?
Actually, no. I feel like Bennigan's.
Eat at Bennigan's. There's still a few of us around.
We are the Transportation Security Administration.
But you probably know us as the people who irradiate your balls.
Every day, airports in every major city flood with passengers trying to fly home to their loved ones, attend business encounters in exotic locations, or desert their families.
We need to protect those innocent people from terrorists who will attempt to board the plane with shampoo and mouthwash.
And that's why we need to irradiate your ball sack before you can board the plane.
We have to X-ray every American to expose all possible weapons and brighten our day with naked pictures of free Americans.
And bombard your balls with deadly radiation to protect future Americans.
Sometimes people ask, if we irradiate your balls, doesn't that kill future Americans?
Well, freedom isn't free.
Your children will have to make sacrifices for the sake of your children.
And your children's children.
Who will also make sacrifices.
Your noseless, mutated offspring will live in a secure nation where jihadists won't grab one of your children's children's children and cut off one of their multiple heads.
That's also why we probe your anus, to prevent trauma.
We search your bags to guard your privacy.
We confiscate your toiletries, to preserve toiletries.
And yes, we repeatedly kick you in the balls, to save the balls.
We are the TSA, the strongest, bravest, most well-trained legion of security professionals that Craigslist could muster.
Hey guys, I apologize, but the soundboard has been malfunctioning a bunch. I'm going to have to see if I can fix it before we record today, okay?
No worries, Barry. Do what you need to do.
We're just waiting on Candace anyway.
Oh, here she comes. Hi, Candace.
Hey, guys.
Uh-oh. What's wrong? You look sad.
My boyfriend broke up with me.
Don't mind that. Barry's just trying to fix the soundboard.
It's okay. I'm too sad to care.
So what happened?
He just said he didn't see a future with me.
And that was it?
And he met someone else. And he's been cheating on me for months. And that's not all. My cat died, too. He was just a kitten. Another one bites the dust, I guess.
Wait, you have had other cats that have died recently also?
No, but my grandma died last week.
Sorry, what a bad week.
It's okay, you just have to look at the bright side, you know?
Sure, like, okay, what else is going on?
Well, my best friend doesn't want to talk to me anymore.
Well, that's okay, we're your friends. And you know what, we're taking you for a night out tonight and to a cat shelter tomorrow.
I'd love that.
Jeez, Barry, the soundboard sure keeps favoring the fart sound when it's glitching.
What are you talking about? The soundboard has been fixed for 10 minutes.
Oh, Barry!
And now, Norman Bates applies for a nursing job.
Hi, I'm here to apply as a clinical nurse specialist.
Wonderful. We are critically short on those. Tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm a very caring person, and I get very strong feelings when I see people in pain.
That is a wonderful quality.
Very strong feelings.
So it is important to keep a cool head in a medical emergency.
Oh, believe me, no matter what happens, I stick to what I'm doing.
Good. So where have you worked?
Well, I spent some time in a mental institution.
Oh, me too. Good civil service jobs there. What was your job title?
Mostly they called me Mother.
Oh, that is so touching. Aside from psychiatric duties, though, did you ever deal with emergency room procedures?
Well, I helped with suffocation and knife wounds.
Excellent.
I also enjoyed showering with the patients. Dead or alive.
Also helpful in some circumstances, probably. So tell me a little bit about your family. Is your mother alive?
Yes and no.
Uh-huh. And your father?
Dead.
Any living family?
My train of thought is often hard to follow. You see, when I was a child and the dog brought in a dead animal, I would spend a lot of time with it before I stuffed it and found a place for it in the house. When anyone would see me talking to myself, I would just pretend that I was talking to the stuffed animals in the house. But really, I kept up a constant monologue that kept my mind from going to more dangerous places. It worked great until I got older and couldn't control my impulses nearly as well.
And where is the dog now?
In the attic. Mostly dead. Stuffed. Still talks to me.
Okay. Well, on the one hand, if I can read between the lines here, you've killed people and things for pleasure.
Fair enough.
On the other hand, we're understaffed, and you seem really excited about the work.
Oh, very much so.
And our patients are about to lose their insurance, if you catch my drift.
I will literally never go home.
Hi. Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour. One of the great pleasures of my life is to be part of the storytelling group The Moth. The Moth, which began in the late 90s as a small group of friends telling stories in founder George Dawes Green's cramped living room, is now a far-flung international community with storytelling programs all over the world, from Los Angeles to Sydney to Nairobi to Dublin and many places in between. We've even done a Moth in Kazakhstan. This year, and specifically this week, is the 20th birthday of the Moth. To celebrate that great achievement, I'd like to share with you the very first story I ever told of the Moth, back in 1998 in New York City.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Hendra.
I was raised a Catholic, and later I became a satirist. And I've always felt that Catholics had a rather unfair advantage in the satire game in that they spent their formative years with men in skirts. But I had an even more unfair advantage in that I was once a man in a skirt myself, specifically a Benedictine monk. It all started when I was 14. I was having a torrid love affair with a woman twice my age, a Catholic married woman. And I'd actually gotten to second base with this woman, so I was madly in love. Of course, I didn't know it was second base because I was growing up in England. Well, this was not at all good for the marriage in question. And after a lot of weeping and praying and kneeling and holding hands, it was decided for some reason that the husband and I should go to a monastery known to this couple and there consult with the Holy Fathers. Go figure. We used to burn people at the stake, now we bond and reconcile. Anyway, after a very awkward journey of 4 hours with this guy, we ended up in the Isle of Wight in the south of England at a monastery called Core Abbey. Core Abbey was idyllic. It was a 1,000-acre farm by the sea with great oak forests that came down to the beach. But what changed my life about Core Abbey was not the place itself, but the priest we'd come to see, Dom Joseph Warrilow. Father Joe, as he was known, was absolutely hilarious. He wore old granny glasses from World War I when he'd been a boy, and he had a big, thick, triangular nose like a groundhog, and he walked like a duck with his big flat feet and his black sandals flapping and poking out of his skirts. He was just about as close as you could get to a cartoon monk, except that he was also a saint. Peace and joy and serenity and simplicity came off this guy like aftershave. And for so profoundly innocent a person, he was immensely knowledgeable about human relationships, and he soon put all our angst to rest. For Father Joe, the only thing that mattered was love. If you could find some love in a situation, however tangled it was, you could untangle it. And I didn't realize till much later how neatly he defused our little love triangle by making me fall in love with him. Now, I'd never come across a priest like this. To me, the church was a bunch of crusty, tipsy, money-grubbing, mostly Irish men who were always telling me to keep my hands out of my pockets or I'd go to hell. Pocket billiards is a mortal sin, Hendra. Well, it is. But Father Joe taught me that the church, although it was all that, was something else. It was a haven, a place for healing, a keeper of the light in the darkest of times, which these indeed were. And one thing really expressed that more than anything, which was the music these monks sang. 7 times a day, 365 days a year. It was called Gregorian chant. An extraordinary, amazing music. Very, very ancient, pre-Christian. Probably went back to Egypt or Mesopotamia. And yet it had, what made it soar was that it had an intense here and now belief in the Bible's message of redemption. Well, that was it. I spent the last 3 years of my school career studying for monkhood. In fact, you could say I was a teenage monk. Other guys had posters of Elvis or Chubby Checker or Chuck Berry on their bedrooms. My musical idol was St. Gregory. They agonized about whether to get a mod or a rocker haircut. I couldn't wait to shave a big bald spot in my hair. And as soon as school was over, in I went. It was everything that I possibly hoped for and more. Outside the monastery walls, the Cold War was at its most lunatic. Former colonies were bursting into bloody revolution. It was a terrible time. But Father Warrilow, Father Joe, taught me a certain detachment from these things. Not escapism at all. On the contrary, great, great concern for all concerned on all sides. But a placing of all this in the context of eternity. For as he said, the Bible says, all this will pass. All things in the world will pass someday like grass before the wind. Like grass before the wind. Well, those were the 4 or 5 most serene months of my life. They too passed like grass before the wind because I was living a lie. When I'd been at school, I had unfortunately won a scholarship to Cambridge University. And I had admitted to tell the good fathers this. When they found out, they insisted that I go, take the degree, and then if I wanted to become a monk, they would welcome me with open arms. So I went to Cambridge and behaved like a pretty good little monk for a year or so. And then one night, on a whim, I went to the theater to catch a satirical review called Beyond the Fringe. Now, Beyond the Fringe was a seminal show, a landmark show. It was probably the first time in modern British history that satire had really socked it to the sacred goods of the nation. To the Church of England, to the Royal Family, to Shakespeare, the BBC, the class system, even World War II. I could not believe that these things could be said in public, or that they could be so funny. I went into that theater a monk, and I came out a satirist. And in that moment, I entered what we know as the real world, a world of laughter and money and travel and some success, and excitement and applause. And I've regretted it ever since. For the next 30-odd years, I never really stopped being a monk. And my little brushes with celebrity when they came never came to much, perhaps because deep down I still believed that celebrity, too, would pass like grass before the wind. Something else happened in those 30 years. The Catholic Church essentially self-destructed. In the name of reform, it committed suicide, theologically, liturgically, and worst of all, musically. That glorious music, all 1,500 years of it, was thrown out like a ball of old manuscript. And in its place came a slew of banal, well-meaning songs written by banal, well-meaning non-entities whose musical gods were Melanie and John Denver. Through it all, Father Joe just became older and more saintly, completely unfazed by all these assaults on his faith and his order and his religion and his music. I used to think of him as a little lighthouse of faith blinking away across the Atlantic. And about 10 years ago, we celebrated the 60th anniversary of his monastic vows. And it struck me at the time that this guy had lived through all the horrors of that horrible century. World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, the Cold War, Vietnam, Cambodia, all the hideous genocides visited on the world by the Kremlin and the Pentagon and Whitehall and Beijing. And he was completely unmarked spiritually by all of it. And this came home to me in a very odd way, because for some reason that I can no longer recall, in the midst of all this celebration, I taught him the words of an old World War II song that my father had once taught me many years before. And he was 80 by now, but he absolutely loved this song, which was completely new to him, even though it was 45 years after the end of World War II. And he marched up and down the cloister with his big old sandals flapping, bellowing this at the top of his lungs. You may know it. It goes like this. Hitler has only got one ball. Goering has two but very small. Himmler is somewhat similar, and poor old Goebbels got no balls at all. Two years ago, he became very sick. And fearing the worst, I went to see him, and I took along my little son, Sebastian, 6 years old, because I knew that he adored children and it might help. And I wanted Sebastian to be able to say someday that he'd once kissed a saint. And the look in that old man's eyes when Sebastian did just that was like a window into heaven. He died 3 weeks later, and I wept for days. And I'm old enough to have lost many dear friends, but this was unlike any other, because with him went my last connection to the real world, the world seen in the context of eternity, to the few final things that I actually held sacred that were beyond the reach of satire. And because satire and the sacred have a deep symbiosis, it's even possible that the satire died with him too. Not, however, the irony. Irony never dies. The day after he died, I went into a Catholic church here in New York, one of those big old Gothic barns up on the upper West Side. And there in front of me on the pew was one of these new modern hymnals. And I opened it completely at random and read these words. Hail Queen, Mother of Mercy, our sweet life and hope, all hail. We cry out to you for grace. Please don't turn away your face, lest we should in our journey fail. Awful. Ghastly. Melanie has a lot to answer for. And I thought back across the years to that faraway boy standing in a candlelit church, surrounded by the men of peace he so wanted to be one of, while we sang the exquisite Latin words that this wretched doggerel was trying to approximate. It's called the Salve Regina, Hail to the Queen. And it's one of the oldest hymns in the Catholic Church. And ironically, it was Father Joe's favorite. The Salve is a kind of half lullaby, half love ballad, which has been sung at bedtime in the last office of the day by countless good men and women down through the centuries. And since you're never likely to hear it in a church again, I'd like to try and sing it for you here tonight. So this is for the moth and for Joe. And given these surroundings, it might be a first. Salve Regina, Mater Misericordiae, Vita Dulcedo, et Spes Nostra Salve. A te clamamus, exules filii Eve. A te suspiramus, gementes et flentes, in hac lacrimarum valle. O clemens, O pia, O dulcis Virgo Maria. Thank you.
Tony, we gotta come up with a promo. Our listeners don't know enough about all the great stuff the final edition does. Even when we tell them, it's all this like blah 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 dot 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 www URL crap. No one gets what that is on radio. They just tune it out.
Well, I have the perfect way to hold their attention while we give them the goods. When I was at the National Lampoon in the 70s, our most famous cover had a cute mutt with a 38 Magnum to its head and the legend, "Buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog."
Yeah, I remember that, but how does that help us? It was a visual image for a magazine.
Meet Freckles.
Freckles? Oh, there. Good boy. Yay! What's the matter then?
Also, meet my 38 Magnum.
Jesus Christ, you have a gun? Don't wave that thing around here. Is that thing loaded?
Sure is. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. If you don't stay tuned to this promo while Jeff gives you all the necessary info about our fabulous website and our fabulous YouTube channel and other fabulous stuff we do, I will shoot this
dog.
Jesus, man, take the gun out of that defenseless animal's ear.
Uh-uh. Give him a good, Chef.
Oh, my God. Poor Freckles. Okay, fine. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour, you want more of what we do, go to thefinaledition.com. Our radio airs on this network on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at 8, as well as Wednesday at midnight. We've also got an album. We've got a Twitter feed. We've got a great YouTube channel, Facebook, everything you can want at thefinaledition.com.
Now, tell them to tap all that into their iPhones or leave themselves an audio memo.
No, I won't. I told them enough, Tony. I'm calling me a...
Tell them, or the dog gets it. I'm cocking the gun right now.
Okay, listeners, please, write this down. Thefinaledition.com. Thefinaledition.com. Go there for everything you want from the Final Edition, or this crazy old British coot is going to plug old Freckles.
Okay, that wasn't so hard, was it? Come here, Freckles, you dumb old chum. Hey, get down! Get down! Get away from me! Get you crazy cunt!
Good job, Freckles! Get him! Sick him! Oh, yeah, this is Jeff Kreiser for the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. 8 p.m. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Midnight on Wednesday.
No, Freckles, put that thing down! You don't have opposable thumbs! No!
President Kennedy would have been 100 years old this week. That is, if all the shots being fired by various conspirators around Dealey Plaza on that fateful November day had missed. Or if one of the bullets had harmlessly grazed the presidential scalp.
Jesus, Jackie! Someone's shooting at us!
What? I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Come back, you, crazy bitch. You'll, fall off the,
Meanwhile, two limos back.
Why, Lyndon, were those gunshots?
Could be. Hey, did Kennedy get hit?
No, he's fine.
Shit.
But Jackie done got herself run over by the Secret Service limo.
First Lady was rushed to Parkland Hospital but was pronounced dead on arrival. Overcome with grief, the president flew her body back to Washington on Air Force One, still clad in her much-admired pink Chanel suit, the jacket now disfigured by the Secret Service limo's tire tracks. The passing of this legendary fashion icon is being mourned across the nation by countless distraught homosexuals.
Welcome to Alternative Universe Theatre. This week, a timeline of the tumultuous life of John F. Kennedy, once and future president.
February 1964. President Kennedy announces the withdrawal of all U.S. advisors from Vietnam, abolishes the draft, and burns his draft card. Top CIA officials begin covertly discussing Plan B.
June 1964. Vice President Lyndon Johnson disappears. Several weeks later, his body is dredged from the Potomac, its feet encased in a block of cement. D.C. police rule his death accidental.
July 1964. President Kennedy announces that his running mate in November's election will be his brother, Attorney General Robert Kennedy.
September 1964. The Republican Party nominates Barry Goldwater as its candidate for president. Goldwater immediately concedes the election to the Kennedys' ticket and is never heard from again.
November 22nd, 1964, a massive memorial for Jackie Kennedy takes place in New York City. Her embalmed body, still in its pink Chanel suit, still with the limousine tire tracks, is placed on permanent display in the window of Bloomingdale's.
When JFK is sworn in as president in January 1965, the 60s officially begin. The young president embraces the new generation of baby boomers, the largest in history.
Hey, forget the history! The guy's 100 fucking years old! You got 52 more years to get through! Just the top stories, okay?
Oh, okay. Okay.
The new Federal Youth Administration is launched. Its spare change program hands $5,000 to every young person between the age of 16 and 25 to be repaid whenever. It declares 1966 the first summer of love.
1968. With the slogan, "Two good terms deserve another,"
the Kennedy brothers announced they're running for a third term. Richard Nixon is defeated in the biggest landslide in history. 1968 is declared the third summer of love.
During the fourth summer of love at the Woodstock Festival in 1969, JFK announces that U.S. troops will intervene in the conflict in Northern Ireland to free Ulster from the tyranny of Protestant England. A million fans chant along with him, "Ich bin ein Mick."
The Federal Youth Administration launches a recruiting campaign for the war in Ulster with the headline, "Girls go down for guys who sign up." The Pentagon is overwhelmed with volunteers.
Outraged WASP groups claim federally sanctioned blowjobs are unconstitutional and protest on both coasts by organizing massive cocktail parties without past canapes.
The war in Northern Ireland comes to an end when American bombers drop Agent Orangeman on Protestant neighborhoods in Belfast. It's a lethal cocktail of dioxin and Bushmills whiskey. Reverend Paisley surrenders.
1970, the fifth revival of Camelot wins a Tony.
Speed it up! You're not even in the 70s yet!
1971, the first female astronaut in space completes an orbit of the Earth, accompanied by the president's brother, Teddy Kennedy. She drowns in the splashdown, but Teddy swims to safety.
1972, JFK announces he'll run for a fourth term. Brother Robert runs against him as a third-party candidate of the Kennedy Party. The Republican Party declares bankruptcy.
1973. At his fourth inaugural, JFK, now known universally as the Skipper, recites the oath of office from memory. In a gesture of reconciliation with his brother, he appoints his wife, Ethel Kennedy, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. RFK ignores the gesture and announces the Kennedy Party slate of congressional and Senate candidates for the 1974 off-year elections.
With JFK's attention on Catholic issues and little U.S. aid, Israel loses the Passover War, having already lost the Yom Kippur War, the Rosh Hashanah War, the Purim War, and the Sukkot War. The only territory it has left is Gaza. The Skipper comes to the rescue with massive U.S. aid to help build the world's mightiest shopping mall, the Gaza Plaza.
1974, Harvey Milk, an obscure San Francisco city official, defeats Ronald Reagan in the race for governor of California. His first act as governor is to legalize gay marriage effective immediately. Celebrations in San Francisco cause an earthquake measuring 6.1 on the Richter scale.
1974. In the off-year election, RFK's Kennedy Party wins a majority in the Senate. Most of the new senators are Kennedys.
1974, the Washington Post moves its editorial offices into the East Wing of the White House.
1975, Dalton Trumbo, legendary blacklisted screenwriter of the Skipper's favorite film, Spartacus, welcomed back to Hollywood, confronts Ronald Reagan and chastens, calling him a fucking management ratfink, challenges him to a duel, and kills him. The LAPD declines to arrest Trumbo. He receives a personal note of congratulation from the Skipper.
1975, Reagan's distraught wife Nancy launches a statewide campaign called Just Say No to Duels.
1976, the Skipper announces he will run for a fifth term, with younger brother Ted Kennedy as VP. Robert Kennedy announces he will also run for the White House with his sister, Eunice Kennedy, as VP, to preserve our precious two-party system.
In the first and only Kennedy-Kennedy televised debate, the two presidential candidates spend most of the time violently disagreeing about who their father, Joseph Kennedy, liked best. Pundits agree RFK scored big when he revealed the Skipper's 18-year-old son, John John, still played with toys under the presidential desk in the Oval Office.
1976, the Kennedy-Kennedy ticket narrowly wins a fifth term against the Kennedy Party's Kennedy-Kennedy ticket. However, the Kennedy Party wins control of both houses of Congress. Georgia Congressman Jimmy Carter, one of the few Democrats left in Congress, calls the Kennedy family an invasive species. A few days later, he asphyxiates in a 500-gallon vat of his own peanut butter
The skipper's first act as president is to announce long secret negotiations with Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau of Canada to incorporate its 10 provinces and 3 territories into the U.S. to form the United States of North America.
1977, the 13th revival of Camelot wins 11 Tonys.
Okay, that's enough! Jesus! There's still 10 elections to go.
That's all for now. Join us next week for more of our beloved skipper, the only president we'll ever need.
Dedicated listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour may have recognized a theme running through our shows the last 3 months or so. That theme is this. At the end of every episode, we will play the classic piece of satire, Deteriorata, in honor of Donald Trump's presidency. We'll play this until he is gone, and our place in the universe is restored.
Go placidly amid the noise and waste, and remember what comfort there may be in owning a piece thereof. Avoid quiet and passive persons unless you are in need of sleep. Rotate your tires. Speak glowingly of those greater than yourself, and heed well their advice, even though they be turkeys. Know what to kiss and when. Consider that 2 wrongs never make a right, but that 3 do. Wherever possible, put people on hold. Be comforted that in the face of all aridity and disillusionment, and despite the changing fortunes of time, there is always a big future in computer maintenance.
You are a fluke of the universe. You have no right to be here. Whether you can hear it or not, the universe is laughing behind your back.
Remember the Pueblo. Strive at all times to bend, fold, spindle, and mutilate. Know yourself. If you need help, call the FBI. Exercise caution in your daily affairs, especially with those persons closest to you. That lemon on your left, for instance. Be assured that a walk through the ocean of most souls would scarcely get your feet wet. Fall not in love, therefore. It will stick to your face. Gracefully surrender the things of youth, birds, clean air, tuna, Taiwan, and let not the sands of time get in your lunch. Hire people with hooks. For a good time, call 606-4311. Ask for Ken. Take heart amid the deepening gloom that your dog is finally getting enough cheese, and reflect that whatever misfortune may be your lot, it could only be worse in Milwaukee. You are a fluke of the universe. You have no right to be here. And whether you can hear it or not, the universe is laughing behind your back. Therefore, make peace with your God, whatever you conceive him to be, hairy thunderer or cosmic muffin, with all its hopes, dreams, promises and urban renewal, the world continues to deteriorate. Give up.
You are a fool.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. The voices of the Final Edition Radio Hour are performed by Bruce Cherry, Jin Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Keith Saltahanes, Gil Barron, Ben Kirchner, John Gutierrez, Megan Gallagher, Samantha Gerwitz, Sean Ari Lehair, Dan Frick, Jeff Chrysler, James Mount, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Jessica Park, Kurt Weitzman, Rachel Rauch, Andrew Danish, Anne Tuchel, Rob Miller, Kayla Merrill, and Leslie Shapira. The writers of the final edition: Jack Handy, Kit Lively, Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Chrysler, John Marshall, Barry Lank, James Mount, Gil Barron, Ben Kirchner, John Gutierrez, Jessica Park, Kurt Weitzman, Leslie Shapira, Melinda Hughes, Jeremy Rayburn, Steve Rosenfield, and Peter Kleinman. The final edition is produced and directed by Tony Hendra and Jeff Chrysler, West Coast production by Barry Lank. Audio edited and engineered by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of The Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.